From KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. Bartlett Regional Hospital Board announced its CEO selection at a meeting last night. David Keith will lead Juneau's hospital beginning next month. He'll replace Jarrell Humphrey, who took over the hospital as interim CEO last fall. That's after former CEO Rose Lawhorn abruptly resigned and was fired by the board in September. David Keith is currently in a leadership role at a regional health center in McAlester, Oklahoma. He has more than three decades of healthcare leadership experience, including Alaska experience at Providence Medical Center and Alaska Native Medical Center in Anchorage. Keith will begin August 15th. His annual salary will be $400,000. That's $80,000 more than what Lawhorn made. The state reported 123 cases of COVID-19 in Juneau last week among residents and non-resident visitors to town. That number does not include positive results from home. Statewide, there were 2,946 cases reported. That includes more than 900 non-resident cases. More than half of those were identified on vessels at sea related to tourism. No new Alaska resident deaths were reported during this period. Statewide, 83 people with COVID-19 are in the hospital. One of them is on a ventilator. Juneau's Bartlett Regional Hospital is treating two people for COVID-19. As of Tuesday night, 20 hospital employees were out with the virus. COVID-19 vaccinations are now available for anyone 6 months or older. Juneau Public Health offers vaccine clinics on Wednesdays and Fridays. In Juneau, call 907-586-6000 or go to juneau.org/vaccine to make an appointment. Republican congressional candidate Tara Sweeney says she's focused on her campaign for a full 2-year term in the U.S. House. She's no longer on the special election ballot to decide who serves the remainder of the late Congressman Don Young's term, but she says she's not discouraging anyone from writing in her name.
Folks are, you know, going to be voting the way that they vote, and if they write in my name, that is really kind of the prerogative of the individual voter.
The Division of Elections says write-ins won't count unless they're for a candidate who has registered as a write-in. Sweeney hasn't. She has until August 11th.
I don't think, you know, we've ruled out any options. This election has been absolutely full of twists and turns and surprises. And so, you know, it'd be crazy to rule out any sort of options.
Sweeney is one of the best funded candidates. Her campaign raised about $280,000. A separate independent group working to get her elected has raised more than double that amount. She finished fifth in the special primary in June, not high enough to advance to the special general election on August 16th, but that's also the day of the pick one primary in the regular election for the full term that starts in January. Sweeney is among 22 candidates in that race. Four will advance to the November ballot. The three U.S. House nominees on the special election ballot are Republicans Nick Begich, the third, and Sarah Palin, and Democrat Mary Peltola. They're also running for the full term. An invasive species has been found in Alaska for the first time. This one has the potential to wreak havoc on important commercial and subsistence fisheries. As KRBD's Eric Stone reports, biologists with Metlakatla Indian Community say they found the first evidence of European green crabs on Annette Island near the southern tip of southeast Alaska.
Scientists had been looking for the crabs for years, and to their relief, so far they had come up empty. Then came a troubling find on the beaches of Annette Island, three shells from a European green crab.
Well, everybody was pretty much shocked, I guess, is the best word.
Dustin Winter, the director of Metlakatla Indian Community's Fish and Wildlife Department, says the mid-July find is the first evidence of the invasive species' presence in Alaska. The tribe has been working with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration to monitor the seas and shores for signs of the crab. The crustaceans are 2 to 4 inches wide with spines on their head. Metlakatla biologists started setting traps in 2020 after a shell fragment was found in Haida Gwaii. That's an island chain off the coast of northern British Columbia.
Started out kind of small, but it's turned into quite the project now. We have three, sometimes four people working every other week, setting pots and pulling pots and recording what kind of crabs they're catching.
Winter says that as of July 22nd, they still haven't located a live specimen, but NOAA Fisheries biologist Linda Shaw says the discovery means it's time to take action.
I think that it definitely is a reason for concern, but not any kind of panic. I think that it's a wake-up call that they are moving our way. They are, you know, detected here now, so we need to take it seriously, but we are not in the situation yet that Washington State is.
In Washington, Governor Jay Inslee declared an emergency over the state's green crab infestation in January. The state has spent millions fighting the spread of the species. Last year, the Lummi Nation near Bellingham reported capturing 70,000 during a five-month span.
In the past year, their populations have exploded in Washington State and Oregon.
Scientists say the crustaceans are a threat to ecosystems and commercial fisheries. They uproot eelgrass beds in search of food, which serve as habitat for herring and salmon. Shaw says they're also a threat to fellow shellfish.
They compete with juvenile Dungeness crab. They are shellfish predators, so things like clams they would directly eat. And then there's also anecdotal information from British Columbia that they predate on juvenile salmon.
Invasive European green crabs have been found in U.S. waters since the 19th century. Scientists say their microscopic larvae likely hitched a ride in the ballast tanks of ships crossing the Atlantic, and they've hurt native species. The crabs are blamed for the decline of the soft-shell clam fishery in Maine. They were first found on the West Coast in 1989 in San Francisco Bay and have been spreading north and south ever since. Shaw says the crabs tend to spread with El Nino. That's the weather pattern characterized by higher than normal sea surface temperatures in the central and eastern Pacific. She says warming ocean temperatures associated with climate change also play a role.
Warmer temperatures would allow greater survival and reproductive time frames, right? So if it's warmer, they have more chance to reproduce and they have better growth and they have a longer season.
So what can be done to prevent them from spreading further north? Shaw says for now, trapping the crabs is thought to be the most effective approach.
So, you know, enclosed bays and areas are places where we might be able to do intensive trapping to, if not eradicate, at least control them, especially in areas where you have resources at risk that are important.
It's also important to know where the crabs are, so scientists are asking the public to keep an eye out for them. Though they're called green crabs, they're found in a variety of colors. Shaw says they're most identifiable by the spines on either side of their eyes.
We like to say find the five spines. So green crab have five spines on either side, right and left of their eyes, and then three bumps in the middle. And those are the only crabs in Alaska right now with those characteristics.
Officials are asking people who find green crabs in Metlakatla to bring them to the Department of Fish and Wildlife Office. Sightings can also be reported in Metlakatla and elsewhere to the Alaska Invasive Species Hotline. That's 1-877-INVASIVE. With additional reporting from KRBD's Reagan Miller, reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
Last week, the White House announced U.S. gas prices had been on the decline for over a month, marking some of the fastest price declines in a decade. According to AAA, the national average on Tuesday was $4.33 a gallon, down from the mid-June peak of just over $5. But while gas prices across the nation have been steadily decreasing since they peaked in mid-June, Alaska drivers haven't been so lucky. KDLL's Riley Board has more on what's causing that lag and how it's affecting local businesses.
Brent Hibbert owns and operates Alaska Cab on Kalifornsky Beach Road. He says the high prices have been affecting the company's cab drivers, who pay for their own fuel.
You know, it's probably cost them $25 to $30 extra a day. You know, but we had to raise our rates, which we didn't want to, but we did, and
Alaska has been dealing with those high gas prices for longer than most. Forbes reported earlier this month that the state was among a handful where gas prices were falling the least. Larry Persley, a longtime Alaska oil industry observer, says gas inventory turnover in Alaska is slower than it is elsewhere in the country, which could account for the lag. But in general, Alaska gasoline prices tend to be higher than those in the lower 48. Persley says that's related to the relatively small oil refinery that supplies Alaska gas stations and the proportionally higher energy costs that come with it.
The single substantial refinery in Alaska, it's at Kiski. It does tens of thousands of barrels a day, whereas the large, highly efficient refineries in the lower 48 do hundreds of thousands of barrels a day. So
Persley also says city and borough sales taxes in Kenai and Soldotna add 6% to any fuel costs inside the city limits. This keeps them pricier than, say, in Anchorage, where city taxes only add 10 cents a gallon. High gas prices are driving people out of the cities and into the small town of Cooper Landing, where surprisingly low prices are keeping fuel pump owner Arden Rankins pretty busy.
We're selling so much of it, it's unbelievable.
At just $5.01 a gallon today, the prices at the Sunrise Inn gas pump are drawing motorists from around the peninsula with their low prices, including those with motorhomes and campers, which Rankin says has never happened before.
And we're selling so much gas, actually, that we're getting gas delivered daily or every second day.
Rankin says that she's just using the formula that the business usually relies on to calculate their fuel costs. She says her low prices are especially surprising, because getting fuel all the way out to Cooper Landing is just more expensive than bringing it to cities like Anchorage and Soldotna.
Instead of making a profit on a really high price, we're doing very well with a lower price than the formula that we've always used, and the numbers are making us a lot of money. You know.
Analysts predict that costs nationwide will continue to drop. And while Alaska's prices aren't dropping quite so fast, they are falling, slowly. At a Speedway Express in Nikiski, for example, a store clerk said prices are declining by just a few cents a week. Today, the station's marquee clocked in at $5.59 a gallon. In Kenai, I'm Riley Board.
And finally, quick look at the National Weather Service forecast for the Juneau Borough and Northern Admiralty Island. Tonight, rain. Rain may be heavy at times, lows in the mid-50s. Thursday, rain, highs in the mid-60s. Also, the Weather Service has put out a special weather statement about a second glacial dam release on Taku River. The second glacial dam release has caused rises on the Taku River east of Juneau. Weather Service expects river waters to rise over the next 12 hours. Satellite analysis suggests that a crest could occur sometime Wednesday morning, but it's possible that a later crest time could occur depending on how much water is released from Lake No Lake. Expect some debris to flow down the river at times as well. No flooding is expected at this time. That is it for the KTOO News Update for Wednesday, July 27th, 2022. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.